and welcome to the Amiga Ireland podcast. I'm Jarlath.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Rob.
And today we've got a really interesting guest with us, an artist, engineer, and a musician whose work is heavily inspired by Amiga. The song we play for the gaming section in our podcast usually comes from Turrican 2. It's Traps by banjo guy Ollie, and he's with us here today. Hi, Ollie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. It's by Chris Hulsbeck, really. But
we like your version. We like your version.
But your version is good. It is really good.
It is. I think you reinvented sufficiently. tell us how you got into Amiga.
Oh, wow. My father worked for Philips years and years ago, and so I was lucky. I had a computer very early on. We had the MSX, and so I had that for a very long time. And I changed school, and in my class there was this guy that had a few computers as well, and one day he got an Amiga. So I went straight to his house to check it out, and more or less my jaw dropped when I saw what the Amiga could do. And he had Shadow of the Beast running on it, and it was just insane, you know. For the time, I'd never seen anything like that. So I think the next month, I ended up asking my parents if I could get one for about a month flat, and the next month I had an Amiga in the house. So that's kind of how it started. Yeah.
Nice.
I was always more interested in computers anyway than just consoles, so it was kind of a natural progression. I think it was either going to be an Amiga or an Atari ST, and then when I saw the Amiga,
that's made up your mind for you.
No contest. Yeah, no contest.
Yeah, and in fairness to your parents, that's a good turnaround time. I was waiting a year.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when did you start actually, you know, recreating scenes from Amiga games and painting them?
I started that YouTube channel, was it 2014? And it the reason I started is I discovered a guy called Smooth McGroove. Who does, mm-hmm. you know, covers. He's probably the cover guru now at this stage. And I was like, wow, you know, it's really cool stuff. So I actually sent him a message, said, you know, have you any plans to cover anything from the Turrican series? And he replied and said, well, not really. I don't really know much about it. And so I was kind of disappointed. And then that same evening, I was looking at all my instruments, and I thought, well, actually, I could do it. So I started doing a few covers just to practice. My goal was actually just to do a couple of tracks from Turrican and stop. So I did about four, and I think my fourth or fifth one was Traps from Turrican. It sort of started from there, and then I did another, I did Desert Rocks. I think, no, Desert Rocks was the first one. And then, yeah, the channel kind of took off from there. And at the time, it was perfect because I was painting a lot, and I was kind of semi full-time or part-time artist. I was in galleries, and I was doing a lot of traditional music scenes and scenes, seascapes and that kind of stuff. And I wasn't enjoying it very much anymore because I found myself in a place where I had to paint. I had to take commissions and that kind of stuff. So it just wasn't fun. So I stopped and started playing music again because I had stopped music for the painting. And then I think it was kind of last year or the year before, like halfway through the banjo guy Ollie stuff, I kind of felt like I wanted to paint again, but I didn't want to paint the stuff I used to paint. So I started playing painting scenes from video games, and kind of naturally stuff like, you know, Another World and Monkey Island, mm-hmm. and stuff like that kind of, you know, felt very natural.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a way to just link all the hobbies and passions together.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's very good stuff.
You're a developer too. Have you ever coded on or for Amiga?
Yeah, but nothing that anybody saw. But yeah, I used to do I discovered programming through the, you know, the MSX Basic and that kind of stuff, and then I went to assembler code for the MSX. So when I got the Amiga, a few of us kind of dabbled in our various 8-bit computers. So we started trying to make demos, and we were very bad at it. I think the most we managed really was a scrolling Starfield, but it was all done in assembler, so it was it was cool.
Did you code on assembler, or did you use like Amiga E or Blitz Basic or Amos?
A friend of mine had Amos Basic, so he did stuff with that. That was actually quite powerful, surprisingly powerful, especially for 3D stuff. Like he actually made an entire 3D demo. It's sort of inspired by the demo that was going around at the time with spaceships and was it called Odyssey or Voyage or something like that. He actually coded that on his own with Amos, but we did most of our common stuff in assembler.
We have a desert island question here we like to ask when we're interviewing people. If you had to pick one favorite game, mod, application, and demo, what would they be?
To bring on a desert island.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that has electricity and.
Yeah, and assuming I've got an Amiga and a screen.
That's it.
What game would I bring over? Has to be something I can replay again and again. Maybe Speedball 2.
Ah,
good choice.
Yeah, I played it. It's probably my second or third favorite game on the Amiga, but if I'm stuck forever with this one, it'll have to be something I can replay again. That's a great game.
How about for an application, a mod or a demo? Do you have any favorites?
So, I did a lot of music on the Amiga, so something like ProTracker maybe, or Med, Octamed. I use those a lot.
Cool. How about a demo then, or a mod?
Demos. God, there's so many of them. The Enigma demo, just for the music. That intro music is so cool. You know the one I mean with the flute. I love this demo actually.
Cool. Okay.
Very good.
Well, if we if there's ever a state of emergency here, I think of a rough idea what you'll be packing.
So you actually got a lot of fans of your music. But how long does it take to put a track together? When you're doing all the parts yourself and then assembling it all afterwards. How long does that take you normally?
Because I have a day job and other commitments and all that. So right now I can really realistically release one every 2 weeks.
And
if I go in crunch mode, maybe one a week. So it does take a good week, because I can only really work on it if I work on it every day, it's about 2 or 3 hours at a time really I have, and that's focusing strictly on that. I can't do anything else then. So all in all, it's probably a week. In terms of hours, I would say it's a good 24 hours to make a cover. I mean, funny enough, the learning and playing part is the part that takes the least amount of time. It's all the arranging and editing afterwards, and then doing the videos and putting the video together. The text just forever. It's very time consuming. A week would be is the most I can.
Yeah, that's still an impressive turnaround. That's it.
Right. So is Chris Halsbeck aware of your work? Do you have any idea?
I have a Patreon thing, crowdfunding thing, and he was the third contributor on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Very good.
So it's really cool. Yeah. So that was just after the first one of his I did. He actually joined the Patreon there, and then. So that was kind of the signal that, I should probably keep doing it, because, if a guy you've been in awe of all your childhood thinks that what you're doing is cool, so, I could do it. And then I ended up chatting with him, and we sort of have a project together, I just need to find the time to start working on it. But yeah.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
You can guess what it is.
mm-hmm. Very good. Looking forward to it.
Mm. And will there be an announcement anytime soon, do you think?
Probably not. No, the way we had it planned would be essentially to do an album of his stuff, of me covering his stuff. So all the work obviously is done by me. So it's going to be, and I kind of said to him, you know, I'm going to do one. I'll send it to you. See what if anything to me needs to be changed. And then we'll move on to the next one. So we haven't set a hard date or mm-hmm. way we want to do it. Because essentially, I just, you know, it's me doing Chris Hulsbeck covers, and I'm just happy that he would approve it, you know. So
absolutely,
yeah. It was supposed to be for last year already, and I just haven't had time to work on it. And then this year, I'm gonna do my best to at least do a few covers. So yeah, it's a long term one.
And Ollie, what instruments do you play?
Well, really. If it's got strings, I'm gonna give it a go.
right.
Yeah, it's the guitar. I started with the guitar, and I have a bouzouki. I played a lot of Irish music as well, so I played the bouzouki a lot and the flute. And then I got into the banjo and then the stuff like the ukulele or the bass or once you've played a few string instruments, they're not that different. It's not that much of a leap to go from one to the other. So I really only see them as sort of extension of the one instrument. And then recently I got into the accordion. But I played a bit of piano, so it's a piano accordion, so it's not too mm-hmm. similar either. And then it gets easier and easier when you've learned a few instruments to learn new ones, because you can have an idea of what you want to do with them already. Mm-hmm. where the notes are, what the good notes are, wrong ones are. So you're not spending as much time. And then when you have a piece to learn for a specific instrument, it's faster. You're not just playing mm-hmm. random stuff and going nowhere for about 2 months. You know, you have a goal. So how many? I don't know. Yeah, a lot.
Wow.
It looks like it from your videos.
Yeah. So when did you start in music, and when did you start playing instruments?
I think I was maybe 12 or 13. Nice. I wanted a guitar, so yeah, I got one for Christmas. And then, yeah, it kind of started there. And it was funny because I was making music with the MSX, and... Or maybe, was it later? Around maybe 13, 14, sorry. And then I had the Amiga already back then, I think. So I was already making music on these machines. Like, and I was writing, you know, full compositions, like in demo type of music. And then suddenly I was given an instrument, and I couldn't play anything on it because it's really hard.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was the most disappointing thing for ages, because I couldn't get anything out of it. It was just impossible to play. It was so hard. But I kept at it, so... I suppose I was annoyed that I couldn't play as well as I could play on the computer. That's what kept me going. Like, that was my goal, to be able to play the same stuff I was playing on the computer. But it was so disappointing.
Yeah, I can imagine. And did you get lessons then, or are you self-taught, or
no,
did, like, formal education?
Really, no, I never got any lessons for anything, really. I just... Do you know, with music, it's really a matter of practice. And then again, when you have an idea of what you want to play. So I was just trying to play the music I was playing on the computer. I was just trying to play these as already, replicate them, because they were simple enough on the guitar. So yeah, I never felt like I needed lessons. It's really down to practice, and it's only so much time you can spend, you know, watching tutorials or getting lessons from somebody. And I had friends who could play the guitar as well, so
maybe
I was watching them and kind of soaking that
picking
up,
it up from there.
Yeah,
very good. It's impressive.
So how did you start making music, actually? You know, was it on the MSX?
Yeah. Just through basic programming.
All right, so actually banging the sound chip.
Yeah, there was no... The MSX had a very good basic, and there was a few functions to just to literally just play note and change the... well, you can change the waveform, but it's square. It's a square waveform, but you could actually obviously alter it in lots of ways. So I sort of learned the basics of music through that, and harmonies, and how to make chords and things like that. But it was all done through programming, so it was a steep learning curve. But I suppose when you're a kid, you just do it anyway.
You have time to throw at these things that you don't otherwise, or you don't
exactly,
anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you have all that time to dedicate to.
And I've got one more. And do you come from a musical family? Was there, you know, like anyone in your family who played an instrument or instruments?
Not really, no. Or I wasn't exposed to music when I was a kid in the family environment. It's only years and years and years later that I discovered that my granny had a violin. But I never heard her play. I just remember seeing that violin on the wall, and that was it. And I didn't even know what it was, or that it was a musical instrument. It's only when I started asking, what is that thing? She said, it's a violin. She used to play it, but I never heard her play it. And my grandfather on the other side of my family had a drum kit. And similarly, I've never heard him play, but I ended up finding the drum kit in the attic, and I have bits of it here. I've used like the brushes, and some of the shakers are actually from that kit that I brought back here.
You know, from my memories of, you know, growing up, you know, around the Commodore and Amiga years, there are certain TV shows and maybe music and stuff that I remember, even though they weren't actually related, they always kind of come back as strong memories connected with it. Do you have anything like that stands out from you from that time?
So I grew up in France, and I don't recall. There was TV shows later on, but when I was a kid and when I was using the MSX and the Amiga, no, I don't recall any shows at the time. They really came much later on, and then I'd gone to college by then, I think, so I missed out on them. I don't have any nostalgia for certain TV shows. Or now, there was magazines I remember. These were I still have a few copies here of French magazines.
Were they computer magazines or totally, unrelated?
Yeah, Amiga dedicated, and a few MSX magazines.
Cool. Were these like translations of other kind of well-known ones from the States and Britain or Europe, or were they actually French originating?
Oh no, they were French. French. There was a magazine called Dragon Magazine in France, and I found out years afterwards that it was actually just a straight translation of an American magazine about Dungeons and Dragons. But no, these computer ones were just their own entity in France, really. Yeah.
Cool.
So my wife is an opera singer, so I know it's not the easiest thing in the world to make a living as an artist, but how easy do you find it to make a living as from art?
Yeah, so I have a day job. I'm a developer. So it's not something I would consider. I did it for a while. I did actually leave my job in Dublin years and years ago when I was young, and I just wanted to try it just to play full time. Traditional music, mostly full time, and you can survive, but not very well. And it's not it wasn't a pleasant experience, mostly because you always have to find the next source of revenue for your next meal and paying the rent for the next month. You just don't
nothing know secure. Yeah, from.
Yeah. It's not. There's no security, and then the only problem with that is you end up having to perform and play all the time, and you don't have time anymore to learn, or you don't really feel like when you have the time, you just want to do something else. So it was quite a revelation when I tried to go full time like that.
Yeah.
So that lasted 6 months, and it's still hard. We're a small country in Ireland as well, so it's. You know, there just isn't that the opportunities you have in bigger countries or even in Europe.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so just a matter of, it's really size, you know, that's a problem here. But nowadays it's, I don't know, I feel like with stuff like YouTube, it makes it a bit more achievable, especially if you find a niche area like that, like covers. Or I mean, there is stories of YouTubers being able to do full time, and they're the exception. But it can happen. Mm. But it takes time. Yeah, it takes time.
Yeah, and a bit of luck.
And a good bit of luck. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's hard. I wouldn't recommend anyone try to go full time as an artist. It's a really, really tough life. And even as a painter, I've been in that scene as well. I've seen people just go full time, because especially with painting, because you're sort of, you know, when you do a few exhibitions, you bring up whatever is your style and it's new for a while, and then it drops after. Usually I've seen people drop after 3-4 years because somebody else comes along. So it's really hard to redo yourself in the visual art scene as well. Yeah, it's a tough life.
Yeah. Mm. I was just going to say, what you say there is very, very true from my perspective as well. But my wife, because she just could not get work in Ireland, and rather than sort of pick up a day job, she has she's moved to the UK and there's enough work to get by. But yeah, it's interesting to see if things sort of open up a bit in Ireland. But yeah, it is a bit small for the amount of artists it produces, I think.
Yeah, I hear a lot of artists complaining that there's not enough help, you know, and things like that. Mm. From the government, but I don't think that's the problem. I really think it's inherent to the size of the audience, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, if you do small gigs in America, I've played in America loads of times, and if you do a small gig there, you're still playing in front of 1,000 people. This is a big event here. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the unfortunate
that's reality just of living the way it is. Island. Yeah.
And going back to the actual process of creation itself of music, I mean, not, you know, life and the universe, all that, but you know, for when you're creating music, like, there are so many different stages from, you know, conception to, you know, brainstorm, whatever you have to do, and then, like you said, editing and post-production and all that. What do you enjoy most out of that whole music creation process?
Well, you know what, it's actually all of it, because I know, it's silly to say, but I enjoy the process itself of making a cover from beginning to end, from listening to a tune and thinking, could I pull this off? Can I do it? And then from wondering what type of arrangements I can do on it, what instruments would sound good, and then how to edit it together. You know, some of the tracks need to be doubled or, so it's the entire process I enjoy, and once the track is finished, I never listen to my stuff afterwards, because once the track is finished, it's done. It's of no interest to me anymore. So it's really cool, because it's a problem solving exercise every time, and I often say it's like a sculpting. So you have a base material, and you can have to carve out something out of it. So it's that process of carving out the arrangement out of a tune that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
The playing itself, I mean, I wouldn't play music if I did not enjoy playing. But I've done that for, 30 years now at this stage. So,
mm-hmm.
It's actually the entire process of producing the arrangement that I very much like.
Mm, okay.
I see. So do you still play live anywhere? Or is it something don't do anymore?
No. Yeah, I don't do anymore. And that was one of the reasons I kind of stuck with the YouTube channel, is I stopped enjoying... I think that's when I went full-time. I was playing live so much, and I stopped enjoying playing live. And I kind of realized I was just stressing way too much as well in a live environment. Because, you know, people see you play for an hour, but before that... is half a day of preparation of just even getting there, sorting out your stuff, you know. So people just see a one performance, but it ended up just being too stressful. Most people have no problem with it, but I did. So I decided not to play live anymore. And even sessions, I don't really go in sessions anymore. It's mostly because I don't really drink at all, so it makes it harder and harder to stay late, you know, in the session. But even that, yeah, I don't enjoy it as much. I kind of like now the setting I have on YouTube where I can just take my time. It's my own environment. I can control that, and I get to decide how and when and what. So yeah,
very good.
You're interested in arcade cabinets, aren't you, as well?
Yes.
So, if you could share with us, what arcade cabinets you have?
Sure, yeah, I have... it all started when I got an Arkanoid cabinet. Mm-hmm. And Arkanoid was a game I enjoyed when I was a kid. So I got that... And it's a cool one, because Arkanoid was always it wasn't a full cabinet, so you had to take another machine and put Arkanoid inside. And the machine I have is a Dig Dug cabinet that was made in Ireland, so there was a whole story about it, and anyway, so that's why I got it. And then after that I got a Galaga, an original nice. Galaga, and then Outrun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a Gladiators pinball, a Double Dragon, and I was recently given an Area 51, which is a shooting game. So you have two guns and you have to shoot at on screen. So I have a few.
Mm. Nice.
And then I have a few PCBs, so it's the motherboards where the actual game is. So I have a few of these. As well, so sometimes I swap. It's the Double Dragon one is handy. I use that to swap PCB, so I've put Kung Fu Master there at the moment.
And is there much work involved in repairing those?
Oh yeah. they're old. It's old technology. It's like the Amiga, you know. The capacitors leak or explode, and you know, the damage to the board, you have to repair that. Or some of the ICs just die, so you have to, you know, there's a lot of tracing. You just have to probe with the an IC probe, checking the inputs and outputs, and you know, find the bad one. So it takes a lot of time. A lot of it is very simple architecture, like it's 8-bit architecture, and I try to stay in the 8-bit architecture as well, because it's all through holes, so there's no surface mounted chips, which has really hard to diagnose. So it's simple enough, so if you have time and you have the schematics, it's relatively easy to fix, but it takes a while. And then there's all the wiring that kind of go wrong, and I use CRT monitors, and these are fragile, and a lot of them have to be recapped as well. So yeah, it takes a while, but it's a cool hobby to get into.
Do you still have your first Amiga?
Yeah, I have it here. I'm looking at it. I still have it. My mother actually brought it back. I thought I'd lost it years ago, and my mother came to visit me here about 4 years ago, and she handed me that. So look what I found. And I was like, yeah, it's still working. I didn't have to. It's working perfect. I didn't have to do anything to it.
So is it Amiga 500 or 600?
It's an Amiga 500. Yeah,
very good.
I have a 600 that was given to me by my neighbor. Of all people, he came here and he saw all the stuff I have, and he said, "Oh, I have a few computers." So he gave me his old Amiga 500 and a ton of box games that he had, and he had an Atari XL 600 with a ton of stuff on it. And so I have that here as well.
Nice.
And you know, the Commodore 64 is obviously like famous for the SID chip, and then you've the Paula in the Amiga. Do you have a favorite sound chip?
I very much like the sound actually of the Commodore 64. I didn't have one, nor did any of my friends had one when I was a kid, but my mother used to send me to friends over in England, to a family there in every summer. So I'd go there for 2 weeks, and he had a Commodore 64. So I discovered all the library and all the cool stuff the Commodore 64 could do there. And yeah, I was doing it at the time. I was doing a lot of stuff on the Amiga music, but I like that. You know, I prefer the a sound chip or a PSG type of chip, as opposed to something like the Amiga had, which was essentially a sampler. Because it just had a unique, it gave the machine a unique sound,
personality.
Yeah. Now the Amiga was great, don't get me wrong, like the stuff you could do musically on it was fantastic, but it just, mm-hmm. I always felt it lacked that sort of personality. And it could do some chip music, but essentially they were just short, very, very short samples of different waveforms, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, I know you sort of mentioned the computer magazines in the past, but is there anything sort of that you kind of associate specifically with the Amiga?
Yeah, you mean culturally in general? Is there element of... I was always sort of a...
It's his own little thing.
Outside, yeah. I was always, like myself, a sort of outsider anyway. interested in medias or TVs or anything like that. So, yeah. Even in school, because I was known for the guy who was computer crazy, and I was always kind of looking at everybody going, she don't know what you're talking about. This is the best thing in the world anyways. Sort of like, I kind of had that attitude, you know. Not really. I don't have any cultural references really for...
It's its own thing in itself. That's fair enough.
So, what are your future plans?
More of the same.
Really. So, creating more music, probably.
Yes. More music, more paintings. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing at the moment, because it's on my own terms. So I'm in a very lucky position where I sort of have a bit of a following on YouTube and Facebook, and so I can actually, it's a very, very privileged situation to be in. I can actually make a painting and it's usually gone in a day or less. I make a piece of music, and because, you know, people on Patreon and all the YouTube revenue and all that, I get some money for it. So it's very handy pocket money. It's very good pocket money. It pays for all the hobbies around it, and it's on my own terms. It's actually sort of an ideal situation. I'm not sure I'd like to go full time doing that, because then it becomes a job, and I'm not sure I want that to turn into a job. And I also enjoy my job, so I'm not sure I'd be ready to leave that either. So, I like what's going on at the moment, and I hope I can do it for much, much longer. I have a list of all the tunes I want to cover, and if I continue at this rate, and I keep adding to it. So if I continue at this rate of two covers a month, or a cover every 2 weeks, I'm gonna be busy for the next 7 years.
Long distance plan.
Yeah, but I don't really have a plan. I just have a list of stuff I want to do.
Fair enough.
And are you working on any paintings at the moment?
Not really. Well, I have stuff that's half started. Sketched already. I have more Monkey Island stuff to do. I want to do a bit of sort of free painting, speed painting type of stuff. So you start painting and you don't really know what you're going to paint. So it's just as you put layers and shapes, it sort of draws itself out, and you start then another painting on top of that based on the shapes you have on the... It's a very cool exercise to do, actually. But I've painted in spurs, so... I feel like I want to paint, and then I would do 5, 6, 7, 8 paintings in one go, and then probably stop for a month or two and then start again.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Cthulhu painting that you did here, and
yeah.
anytime anyone comes in to see it, it's just, it's very striking. It's a real stunning piece of work. I love it. And when people come in, they go, wow, that's what, even people who wouldn't typically be into it kind of go, wow, that's a really cool painting. Like, thanks. Yeah, it's fantastic. So Ollie, over the years, what are your, you know, fondest memories? We can finish up with this question, actually. What are your, you know, fondest memories of Amiga over the year personally?
All of it was very enjoyable. I mean,
that's a great answer.
Yeah.
Very
Do you know what I loved is we used to socialize. So there was I met a few friends then in school and different places in the village and villages around, and we'd have this small group, and we all came from different backgrounds. So a friend of mine had Amstrad computers, another one had came from Vectrex. He had Vectrex. Mm-hmm. So we'd meet every most weekends actually, and bring her all our computers, all of it, and literally just either swap or just spend the evening playing different games on the Amiga. And so it was like kind of a LAN parties, except none of us were connected to each other because those things couldn't connect to each other or to a hub at the time. But it was a cool social sort of scene, even though, you know, it was maybe less than 10 of us. Mm-hmm. But that was great fun. Naturally, they all went into the PC scene and then LAN parties, and I didn't quite have an interest in playing FIFA on a mm-hmm. the server, so I didn't continue, you know, doing that. But the Amiga days was really cool because it was all discovery as well. There wasn't, nowadays everything has sort of been, you know, done and invented, but at the time there was a great feeling of just novelty and discovery. And then we'd spend half of the evening just either coding or doing drawing or, you know, just kind of tinkering, you know? Mm.
So being creative,
really cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ollie, thanks so much for taking time out to join us. We're lucky to have a neighbor like yourself. If you want to check out Ollie's work, and you should, there's some fantastic work. There's artbyollie.blogspot.ie, where you can see Ollie's artwork. On YouTube, his username is OLONGUET, that's O Longuet. And there's banjogayollie.bandcamp.com. And you mentioned a Patreon as well, didn't you, Ollie?
Yeah, it's somewhere there. I never like advertising it, so.
Yeah, we'll put them in the links anyway in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Ollie. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise, thank you.
Bye bye.
Okay, bye for now, everybody.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.